Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy. If you're self-employed, your tax return is due tomorrow. So if you haven't done it, contact Golding Accountancy. I mean, it's not going to get done by tomorrow, is it? But yeah, they might be able to help you out. How are you? I am okay. I'm ill again. My endometriosis and or cysts, because who knows what it is, are playing up again. I'm a bit over it all, to be honest, because I feel like as soon as I get back up and running, it starts off again. But I have been in touch with the hospital, and I've got an appointment in May, so oh, fingers crossed it'll all be sorted. Anyway, I'm going to stop moaning, because this week I was joined by the lovely Zoe, who some of you may know as the Chief Shepherdess. She's become a bit of an internet sensation lately. Basically, she was a hairdresser who became a farmer randomly. And she used to work with my mate Nicole. Nicole's kind of like my podcast agent at the moment, because everyone I've had on has got connections to her. But yeah, Nicole basically kind of taught Zoe to hairdress. And then one thing led to another, and she's now a farmer. But we had a lovely chat. It was really interesting. I learned all about different aspects of farming and what led her. It's a very involved story about what actually led her to becoming a farmer. So it's two episodes. But it was lovely. She's a lovely girl. It was a good laugh. And I hope you enjoy it. And this is the first part. All right, see you in a bit.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Work. Work.
What do you like to be called?
Shepherdess.
No. Oh, Zoe.
What? Zoe. Zoe.
Zoe. The chief.
Yeah, that's fine.
The chief shepherdess was just a joke that kind of has now got out of hand. But people do say shepherdess, but farmer shepherdess. Like, doesn't really matter. Whatever you feel comfortable with, really.
I'll call you Zoe.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to start like this because you've already explained some stuff, so that's all great. So yeah. I found you. You used to work with my best friend Nicole many years ago in a salon. And I remember, my memory's really bad, but I remember her saying to me, my old assistant's gone off and become a farmer. And she's having the best time. She's met this guy. And I was like, wow. So what happened? So obviously, did you always want to be a hairdresser? Was that like you come out of school and you went into hairdressing?
Yeah. I always wanted to do hairdressing, and they kind of, for want of a better word, tried to put me off because it was a waste of my academic ability. Basically,
I went to who tried to put you off?
My secondary school.
Oh, okay.
So my mum and dad were very much like, whatever makes you happy, Zoe. Like, I was very much into dancing, gymnastics. So I was never... My sister was always intellectual from such a young age. But I loved reading, but I was so... It's such a cliche. I was so creative. But I was really into...
Yeah.
Like physical things, and to learn I had to touch things, where my sister, she would just learn things from reading a book, and then she'd just be fluent at doing anything she put her hand to, whereas I really had to quite try to do anything. Anyway, got into grammar school, girls stuffy grammar school, and you have focus days, don't you? Like, okay, so today we're going to do a whole day on, I don't know, the ambulance service, and you get people coming in to give you talks. And it just bored the hell out of me. Everyone they brought in, I just thought, oh. The only focus day I enjoyed, which is nothing to do with anything I do now, is they bought this huge, inflatable dome. And you laid in it and they had the stars, like the whole solar system was projected. It was incredible. But that's like the only bit of secondary school that I thought, this is a bit of me. It was called a focus day. So basically you just did a whole day on one subject, and all of us did it. So there was like activities and stuff. And a man came in and basically taught us about the solar system, but he was pointing to things on the, like, it was huge. It was like, I assume your school hall was probably similar to mine. It was like the whole size of where you'd have your assembly. Like, it was massive. And that was probably the only bit of this career and like...
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, but that was just...
What job was that for then?
I have no idea. I think it was probably just keeping us clicked on when it came to actually listening. But we did all these focus days, and I just remember thinking, nope, nope, nope. And there was nothing really that kind of got me going. And then... I think it was probably my mum. So I probably went and got my hair cut. I like doing a bit crazy. Not crazy in the grand scheme of things, but crazy for like a stuffy girls' school. And I used to always get my hair cut by a trainee. My mum used to want me to go to these posh, not posh, but, you know, the salon that she went to. And I always wanted to go to see a trainee because they always did what I wanted. Whereas... Yeah. Other hairdressers that were obviously qualified and stuck in a rut weren't as creative. So I always used to go to this young girl. I just got chatting to her and I thought, I could probably do this. But instead of actually doing that, I went to an art college.
Okay.
It was called CIAD at the time, which was Kent Institute of Art and Design. But now I think it's UCA, and there's some all over the place. So it's a uni now. But I basically just sat in a dark room with my friends and just talked and pretended to do the coursework and never actually
What course did you do?
I did a foundation diploma in art and design or something.
Okay.
Obviously, I've kept it and I use it every day. Oh, I don't think I even finished it. I basically just smoked what I shouldn't,
drank a lot of cheap booze and kind of did what every person really does. Whether you do that early in life or late in life, I think everyone has at least a week or 2 weeks where they kind of lose themselves a bit. But in losing themselves, actually, they think either this isn't how I want to live my life, or they just carry on that way. So I left, and my boyfriend at the time was studying law at Queen Mary's in East London. And he moved to London. All my friends went to uni in London. All of them went to uni. But I didn't want to go to uni. I knew I didn't. I knew it was just a waste of money for me. So I went on the Friday for a job interview at Cabela in Selfridges. And then I moved in with my boyfriend at the time into his halls, which was literally like a metre by metre square room in a single bed. I mean, it was absolutely horrendous. And then I started the job on the Monday. So I've gone from like the tiniest village, like there was 150 pupils in my primary school. Like we used to hatch total. Chicks. Total, 150.
Wow.
So that's like, 25 to 30 in each class.
That's my school, that's my daughter's school year.
Is it?
How much they have each year,
Jeez.
Well, no, that's a lie, actually. They have 120.
Yeah, but that's still
a
lot.
No, they don't have 90.
Well, it's still a lot.
Yeah, it's still,
That's huge. So, yeah, it was tiny village school.
You used
to
hatch chicks.
So, yeah, we would, like, hatch chicks. And then at the weekend, we'd take it in turns to take the chicks home to, like, care for them over the weekend. And, like, we had an air raid shelter where we used to do, you know, it was really oldie-worldy kind of.
Yeah.
And it was lovely, you know, don't get me wrong, but I was so sheltered. Like, everyone was white. Everyone was British. We had like a family, they were Sikhs, so we literally didn't learn about any other religion except Sikh and Christian. We went to the church and had to do harvest, say thanks for harvest, and it was just very, as a kid it was probably pretty idyllic, and we did the maypole and things like that. But then I'm transported into central London, living in East London, in Whitechapel of all places, working in Selfridges. And I was a bit like, gay people exist? Like, I just couldn't, for me, I just couldn't, I couldn't, like, I was like a sponge, like I couldn't suck it up quick enough. Which at 18 is pretty sad state of affairs. Like, it's not like my mum and dad didn't culture me, but we never went on holidays and stuff. We used to go to France, or we stayed in the UK camping. Like, I never saw the world, which that could be seen as sad, but actually it gave me quite a nice focus, I guess, when I moved there. Like, I was so intent on learning. So I used to ask loads of questions, and I met people in the salon from all over the world, both clients and obviously stylists. And and what's funny for me, and I always find it really strange, is that blip or whatever while I was in London, which is not a blip because it was such a long time, is just the polar opposite to my life before London and my life now after London. But I never felt like a phony. Like, I never felt like I was like pretending to live a different life. I did feel very comfortable, you know, I was anxious every single day because I hadn't addressed the fact that I suffered from anxiety. But yeah, it's just so strange. It's so strange for me because I didn't feel like I was living a lie or anything. I just kind of got on with it.
Yeah. And it's amazing how different it is when it's not actually that far from when you grew up.
No. Not, I mean,
how many, what is it, 40 miles? 50 miles?
I don't know. I don't know in miles, but if I get on the fast train, I think it's like 25 minutes into Stratford.
It's not far.
No, not at all. And it's so, it is so, so different. And like, some of our sheep are in Southfleet, which it's not, you can see London. If you stand in the field with the sheep, you can see London. And it feels far away. And
so you were in Selfridges?
Yeah. So that's where I done my training in Selfridges. And then
what was that like working in there?
I didn't know that kind of money existed. Which sounds so silly, but like growing up
because you can't imagine how much money people have.
Like, it's sickening. And yeah. I know that sounds really awful to say, but it is actually sickening. And how little meaning money has to them. So a few things. The first thing that scared me is I think I was getting paid £80 per week as an apprentice. That money paid for my just about, I think, my rent. I lived off my tip. I lived everything off my tips. So there was a lot of Arabic women that used to get their hair done in Selfridges, and they wouldn't wash their hair themselves at home. They would just only get their hair done in the salon. So when they came in, they would have a wash, a treatment, a very long shiatsu head massage, and then they'd have the blow dry. They wouldn't wash their hair at home themselves. They would just have it done in the salon weekly. And you could have a VIP room. So there was two VIP rooms. So there was either ladies that, didn't want to be uncovered in front of people. So they'd have the VIP room. But also there was a lot of women that just didn't want to sit with the peasants. And I know that sounds just unbelievable, but there are so many men as well, but mainly women use the salon. And so I got myself quite a cushy job, really, of I kind of assigned myself, or a stylist assigned me to them. I had blonde hair at the time, and they were obsessed. These women, obviously, naturally, their hair's incredibly dark. So they had a fascination with the fact that I was blonde, and they all wanted to have hair like me because it was dyed bleached blonde.
Yeah.
So I built up quite a kind of rapport with a lot of clients, and they would ask for me to wash their hair. And turns out I was quite good at shiatsu head massage, so a lot of people would request me.
Yeah.
And in doing so, I ended up just absolutely raking it in. They would just hand you 50s as tips like it was nothing, and I'd never seen money like this before. And it was scary. You know, I was buying myself Chanel perfume. I was going to Topshop and spending, 100 quid on clothes. And I'd never been in that position before. And it was quite exhilarating, but it was quite scary at the same time. You know, I'd never had a £50 note before. And I was having people handing me these pink notes like they were nothing. And I was kind of checking if they're real. It was insane, and all my friends that were at university obviously are like scraping together enough money for a pouch of tobacco, it was obviously I haven't got anything to show for that time I was in Selfridges, and I was always it. I loved it, and obviously I was always ringing my dad for money, even though I was you just do don't you. I haven't got any money on my Oyster card, Dad, but. Yeah, and then they transferred me to High Street Kensington. And there is a different type of, in Cabela still, there's a different type of money in High Street Kensington to Selfridges.
Yes.
Selfridges, you know, it was vulgar, the amount of money. But actually, no one ever spoke to me like shit.
Yeah.
When I went to High Street Kensington, I was suddenly a peasant that swept the hair. And it very much felt like that. And even as a kind of 18, 19-year-old girl, I was not going to be disrespected like that day in and day out. And being snapped at and not saying please and thank you. So that's when I went to Tommy Guns. That's when I went to Tommy Guns. And Nicole, obviously, who you know, did the rest of my training. And, I graduated under her, really.
Yeah,
Her and a guy called Ricky, who's a really, really good,
really
good colourist. I think he's doing set design now.
Oh, really?
I'm sure I saw on Facebook. It must have been last year. I'm sure I saw him doing like a set design, or because he was an incredibly talented colourist.
Yeah,
and he was so meticulous. I know. Yeah. He always smelt so good.
Yeah.
Always smelt so good. But I kind of got under his wing, Nicole, and for men's hair, there was a guy called Charlie. There was Charlie, Tom and Rufus, and they kind of helped me with the barber inside, but I hated doing men's hair. I hated doing men's hair. For a start, those vintage chairs didn't go down low enough so I could even comfortably cut their hair, which meant I ended up having to wear high heels, which weren't particularly you know, comfortable, just to feel like I was in control of the situation because I could actually reach. But I love doing the women's hair, and I did a few. There's a guy called Kevin who did a lot of session work, and I assisted him quite a lot with magazine shoots under some really, you know, influential people at the time, like Joanna Lumley and these photographers that I'd been reading about in Vice magazine, and suddenly I'm kind of, but I just took it all in my stride. I didn't ever really feel that. Considering I was an incredibly anxious person, I would get myself in such a state about getting the tube, for example.
Yeah.
Because I was claustrophobic. But yeah, I'd stand there, you know, holding tongs or chatting away at lunch to these kind of celebrities, or, well, at the time, probably A-listers, you know. And
yeah.
I didn't really even think about it. Like, I didn't lose sleep the night before. It's just very strange. Once you're kind of in that world, you're very much in it.
Yes, yeah, but it's just normal.
It's just normal. Something I haven't lost in my new life is I will chat like a hairdresser forever. Like, and that becomes very apparent to me when I kind of meet people that are farmers or are in the agricultural industry and they're kind of giving me nothing. And I kind of treat them like this. I was saying to Chris the other day. So Chris, my boyfriend, the first time he took me to the livestock market, you know, I weren't stuck to his side, and it's all these old boys, and they're all, you know, middle aged to 60, 70 year old white males that have not spoken to a young girl in hoop earrings for a very, very long time. And I was kind of just chatting to everyone. And Chris said he looked over at one point and he was like, oh my God, like I've lost her. She's gone. But I loved it because I just spoke to them like they were sitting in my chair and they were a client, which I think is a good skill to have. You know, you can build a relationship with someone in 45 minutes because you want them to come back in 6 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's quite...
Animals.
Yeah, a lot. A lot. Do you know how it's so shit sometimes? It's when it's just me and Chris, like, day in and day out, on the whole, it's fine. We just get on with the job and we do have a laugh. Like, we've both got quite a good sense of humour and he's a pretty funny guy and we do have a laugh. But some days, like, if we've had a row at home and then have to work all day with him, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I cannot describe how horrific it is. And I do think to myself, oh, I've got all day with you. And... So, yeah, I do literally have him to talk to, or the animals or the dogs. So I think that's why I enjoy the social media side of things so much, because I have all these friends to chat to that understand my life.
Yeah.
Whereas in real life, I do have, like, farming friends, but not many of them are like me. They're either... you know, got kids, or they're male.
Yeah.
There's no one. Whereas online, I found like two or three girls that are literally me living in another part of the country or even the world.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. It is nice. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's a very isolating job to have, because say for example it was your birthday tomorrow and you invited me out for cocktails, if I get a call to say that the sheep are out or someone starts calving or, you know, could be anything, they've got to come first, and chances are I'll have to cancel you last minute. Same even when I do things like this and I have meetings and stuff like that, quite often I have to reschedule, move it around, and I just have all my life I've used to feel so guilty about things like that, but it has got to the point now where this is actually my livelihood in the animals.
Yes.
So you kind of, they'll come first no matter what.
Yeah, you can't help it. It's not like you've made a plan and then you've decided, actually, I don't want to do that, I'm going to do it another day. It's all out of your control, isn't it?
It is.
So there's no point feeling bad about it.
I think that was like my biggest lesson, I think, was that I... So I've suffered my whole life. I've got a real phobia of throwing up and being unwell. Like, it has got a name, but I can't pronounce it, so I'm not even going to attempt it. I didn't even I didn't know till recently that it had a name.
Yeah.
And so this has been with me since probably the age of like 5, when I had all my therapy. Yeah. We kind of untangled everything. So I've got a real phobia of throwing up. So that's kind of plagued me for such a long time that I have to be in control. It's kind of linked, isn't it? When you throw up, you're not in control of your own body, which is why it would scare you. Therefore, it can become a phobia. So I like to be in control. So that was my biggest thing when I went from hairdressing. Because hairdressing, you very much are in control. You've got 45 minutes or an hour. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. Done. See you later. You're planned weeks in advance.
Yeah.
So unless you're unwell or have a car crash or something, you're going to be there every day doing these clients. And then I kind of started farming, and you are so far out of control that you have to cling on to the bits you are in control of. And for me, I clung on to those things like bloody tight. So, you know, things that I can control is I can control what time I get up in the morning and like my routine before I leave the house for the farm, which makes me sound like a nutter when I say it out loud, but the things that I could like cling on to, I did. And because everything else, like if it rains too much or it rains too little, the temperature, if an animal is going to get sick, all of these things, you know, there's only so much. Even things like how many lambs. We scanned the ewes, ultrasound the ewes a couple of days ago to see how many lambs they were having, and even that's completely out of our control. My favorite sheep might not be carrying any lambs. Or equally, someone that's actually on their last lambing could have triplets, and you know that it's going to be so detrimental to her health, but there's nothing you can do because it's nature. So that was quite a big thing for me. And
has it helped with your anxiety?
Yeah.
What you do? Yeah.
Oh, I haven't even told you. So the reason why I started farming full time, so I was hairdressing, so I was in Soho a long time. Between the Shoreditch salon and the Soho salon. Then I moved home to Kent. I'd met Chris. Yeah. Which,
How did you meet Chris? Farming, dating.
No, worse, way worse, way, way worse. So Chris used to go drinking with us when we were kids. Not when I say kids, I mean like 16, 17. And like, he'd be at house parties, but he had a missus and I was with a guy. I don't know who I was with at the time, but I was with a guy. And so like his friends, like his boy mates that he used to hang around with, you know, one of my friends was maybe a girlfriend of, so like we used to all mingle.
Yeah.
But he was a year younger than us, which when you're at school, a year younger is like a huge massive deal.
Yeah.
So he's 18 months younger than me. So he was little Chris. He was always little Chris. And he weren't even that little, but we just used to call him little Chris, little Chris. And I didn't fancy him. I don't even remember that much about him. He doesn't remember me at all. At all. I only remember him. Do you know what I mean? That like, it's so funny anyway.
Oh, he does.
No, he actually didn't. And then he started, he asked to be my friend on Facebook before Instagram, before any of that. He asked to be my friend on Facebook. So we've been together like just been 8 years, actually. Facebook reminded me, 8 years. And he just started liking all my photos. And I went on a holiday to Crete, single, with my friend Jamie. And like, obviously we were like topless sunbathing, like banging tan. We'd worked really hard for our bodies for this holiday. And it was like a girl's holiday. And we just basically drank on the beach and had a good time. He started liking all my pictures. And I thought, who is this pervert liking all my pictures? And then he just like slyly, well, sneakily liking my pictures and not stalking, but he had an eye on me. And it was obvious, but we never spoke. And then I went home to my mum and dad's for Christmas in Kent from London. And he got wankered, basically, and sent me a message saying, like, oh, you're a bit fit, or, oh, you're fit. And I just thought, oh, God, Here we go. He's finally grown some bollocks and sent me a message after he's been, you know. And so I can't even remember if I replied or not, but I don't think I did. And then the next morning he was like, oh, sorry, I had a few sherbets last night. A little bit embarrassed. And then he just wouldn't leave me alone and was just like to and fro in messaging. And I didn't not fancy him. In actual fact, his chat was brilliant, and not in a chatting me up way, just in and he felt quite familiar because I knew he weren't a dickhead because he was friends with all my boy mates that had literally protected me through thick and thin my whole childhood. Then he came up to London for a date, and we went to, he was late first of all, obviously. He was wankered and he was late. And in his pocket, he had a pair of pants and a toothbrush in his coat pocket. And I just thought, oh, yeah, I know. It's, he had this like whacking great parka, like Stone Island style parka. And then just a pair of pants and a toothbrush in the pocket. And I just thought, oh, my gosh. And I was half cut because I'd been really nervous about this date. And so I hadn't, you know Nick really well. There's quite often you won't eat all day in hairdressing, especially that kind of hairdressing. So like I hadn't eaten all day. I maybe probably had like a deck of 20 fags and a bite of a croissant. Like I never would have eaten. And then I was so nervous when I got home I couldn't have dinner. So I was just necking. I don't even know what I'd have been drinking then. Something scummy probably. And so I was half cut. He turned up half cut. And then we went to the pub. And he said he was ordering me singles and him doubles, but I don't know about that. And we ended up learning to do the salsa and doing all of these, like, the jive. We learned to do all of these. This couple, like 50, 60-year-old couple, took us under our wings, and it, we were basically ready for Strictly Come Dancing by the end of this date. Like, it was really quite fun. And then we went outside for a cigarette, and I used to drink quite a lot, so I didn't think I was a lightweight, but we went out for a cigarette, and it must be because I hadn't eaten all day, and suddenly I was like, you're going to have to take me home. And he went, what? I said, you're going to have to take me home. And he said, if that's you inviting me home, then, like that. And I said, no, seriously, like, can you take me home? And he had to unlock my door, and then I lived in a flat with two friends, and so he you know, we went upstairs, and my two flatmates were pissed off because I was being really loud, obviously. And they had to, I think they had to get up for work the next day. It might have even been a Sunday. I can't really remember. But obviously with hairdressing and he was a plumber, it doesn't really matter what day it is. Yeah. And so, yeah, basically I was sat. I remember stripping all my clothes off, but it wasn't in a seductive way. It was a more like, I'm so pissed I can't breathe. Like, I had like high-waisted jeans on. I just had to get them off my body. So I basically stripped off, and he said he just stood there like, because he said he felt guilty looking at me. I was that pissed. Yeah. You know what I mean? He felt, we've all been there. Anyway, I projectile vomited down the stairs. Bearing in mind I've got such an extreme phobia of throwing up, this was like a momentous, like, I'd never thrown up from alcohol before prior to this day.
Wow.
Never. Like, I never let myself be sick, first of all, or let myself get so out of control that I was going to be sick.
Yes. Yeah.
Still had a good time, and still, but it also made me very good at drinking, because a lot of people make themselves sick, don't they, when they've had too much, whereas I just, no. Anyway, he said I look fit even when I was throwing up, which is a gold star, isn't it? He said he never said that as well. He was like, babe, I never said that. Definitely did. So I'm standing over the toilet in a bra and knickers, projectile vomiting over the toilet. He's standing there with a glass of water thinking, what have I let myself in for? And then the rest is history, really. So that's how we met. That was eight years ago. And that's a really fun...
So was he a farmer at the time?
No, he was a plumber.
He was a plumber, okay, right.
So he lived here in Kent, and he used to commute to South London. Do all sorts of boiler work, and he used to do some work in like old people's homes and stuff like that, and building sites. So he was basically a tradie. In terms of his attitude and how he kind of carried himself, which is then very different from a farmer.
Yeah.
Very different. His dad was a... So his dad and his granddad, I don't know if it goes back further than that, were farmers. His dad... So Chris's granddad died when the dad was young. And then Chris's dad died when he was young. So he died when he was 12.
Okay.
So he went and lived with his mum and then went into plumbing. I don't think he ever thought he would go into farming again. I think he just had like fond memories of childhood, but I don't think he ever saw it as a career path. I mean, I'd have to check it with him, but I don't think that was ever like his goal. He was earning good money as a plumber, so he kind of just did that. And the story of how we are here is like a whole podcast in itself, and I'm always so aware of that. But if I condense it, then it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
No,
you have to speed me up and do like the new thing on WhatsApp where it speeds up the voice. So Chris went travelling with his friend, and they went to Asia and did various...
Before you got together.
Okay,
yeah.
He come back from travelling in the July, and we got together in the January.
Right.
Okay. So he was... he went travelling and was just stupid, like, went to all the full moon parties, basically ate and drank out of gutter. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've also all been in those situations.
Yeah.
Or know someone. And he got dengue fever. Which is basically a mosquito bite. So, like, I guess malaria in a sense, but it's called a hemorrhagic fever. So he was, like, bleeding from every orifice, like his eyes, his gums.
Oh, my God.
And his temperature was through the roof. And so that his mate was like, mate, you need to go to hospital. So he went to hospital in Vietnam, in Hanoi. And they basically said to him, like, you're not going to survive. You're not going to survive the night. So he was so sick, but he had his iPad and he was, like, video recording himself on his iPad doing his will and things like that because he was just... They just said...
Oh, my God!
Yeah. Which is a huge thing, but he never really acts like it's a big deal, which I can't get. But it's just boys, isn't it? So that, there's a type of free-living boy that's just... buries it.
Also, I guess if he was that sick, he probably couldn't really... You know, like, when you're ill, you're not with it, are you? So maybe you can't actually comprehend what actually happened because he wasn't with it enough when it was happening to really... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, like...
It's like a dream.
They said, do you want to ring your mum? And he was like, what's the point? I'm going to die when she's on the plane and she'll probably have a heart attack, so what's the point? Kind of thing, yeah. Like, it was really, really bad.
Thank God
I weren't with him, because can you imagine... From a selfish point of view, thank God. And, so he come home in the July, or maybe it was in the August, and then, we got together in the January.
So he didn't die, obviously.
He didn't die.
So did he come home straight away as soon as he kind of come out of hospital?
No.
Or did he carry on partying?
He discharged himself for a full moon party.
Seriously.
Which is why we are in this absolute disaster that we're in. Because he didn't rest. He went to this full moon party. He come home here, he's plumbing, and then, like, refurbing a house, like, gutting a house and refurbing it, and just going mental. And he's got ADHD, Chris, so he's very much like, million miles an hour, always on the go. Like, he would used to get up at 4, go to the gym, do a full day's plumbing, go home, have some dinner, drive to South London again to see me in Stoke Newington, and we'd go out for dinner. Like, he was just a nutter. And he just had, like, untold amounts of energy. Like, he just... Yeah. And then he... he kept getting, like, little wobbles and being a bit dizzy and stuff, but he just thought, well, you know, I'm working hard, I'm burning a lot of calories, it's just that.
Yeah.
Because he was like an Adonis, like, he used to go to the gym so much, not saying he's not now, but he, like, his body was his temple. Like, he used to eat turkey mince meatballs as, like, for lunch. That's so grim, isn't it? That's so grim. And I just used to remember, because I was slim, because I didn't eat, I was not healthy, Whereas he was literally like carved by angels. I remember the first time he took his top off, me being like, oh shit, I better put my t-shirt back on. Because I felt so inferior, like I literally looked like a pre-pubescent boy, and there's this like, I honestly, it was so, I remember so vividly thinking, oh shit, that's way better than I ever imagined. But it didn't like blow me away, like I'm not one of these girls that will go weak at the knees with muscles, like, yeah, it's nice to look at, but actually, yeah, if they've got their arm around you in bed, it's actually really uncomfortable because you can't breathe, because your neck's like getting crushed. So yeah, that's completely gone off topic. And anyway,
so he didn't get, sorry, when he came home after all that, he didn't get checked out by the doctors or?
Oh yeah, he went to the doctors and the doctor said you need to take it easy.
Oh okay, right.
Yeah, he did.
Because what does it do to you, this thing?
So it's something to do with your platelets in your blood.
Right.
And you have a really high fever. I probably should know this. But it's just, it's like malaria, like huge fever, hallucinations. And yeah, all his organs took a battering. And it was just, anyway, when he come home, the doctor said, like, take it easy, mate. I think he had to get checked out at home because he needed paperwork so he could claim on his insurance all his treatment in Asia on his health insurance, because he'd racked up some hefty bills by the time he got back. And then so we were like dating and he kept having a little wobbles, and then he drove up to London. He had to pull over on the to see me, and he had to pull over on the side of the motorway, and he said he had like tunnel vision, and it was a panic attack. But he'd never had a panic attack before because he was just so easygoing. Like, he'd never even knew what anxiety was. So for him, it was like quite a big moment there. And, you know, anyone that's ever had a panic attack, you remember your first one because you think you might die. And he managed to get to me, and he was like, oh, God, it was really awful. And he was really out of it. And he woke up the next day and he was fine. We went for breakfast. He said, oh, I might just have a bug or something. You know, I think I'm fine. But I thought it sounded like a panic attack. But because he'd never had one before, it's very difficult to kind of tell someone they've had something when they've never experienced it before. And I was trying to say, oh, that happens to me before, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, no. Anyway, we went for breakfast, went to get on the train because we were going to see the baby sloths at London Zoo. And one of the sloths had babies, and obviously, being the romantic chap he is, he was taking me to see the baby sloths, which is such a cop-out, by the way, because don't you think that's a cop-out date? I do. It's lovely, but I just think baby sloths, they're going to be a 10 out of 10 date, no matter what, no matter who you're with. Like, it's just no imagination's gone into that. Anyway, we never made it to see the baby sloths because we went to get on the train. It was the overground at Dalston we were getting on, and it's quite like a spacey, like it.
Yeah.
And I just turned around and he was just on the floor with his head between his knees, sat on the floor. I was like, babe, you okay? And he was like, nah, like, I'm not fine. And he'd had the funny turn again. And I literally, he had to have his arm around me and he was just staring at the floor, and I had to walk him back to my flat. And I had to ring his mum off his phone and say, you're going to have to drive to London and get Chris. Like, he's had a real funny turn and he felt like he was going to be sick, and it was just awful. And anyway, long story short, he was in bed for almost a year after that. And the doctors so we'd been together like less than a month, like 3 weeks maybe. Like 3 weeks of solid dating. Like, we knew we were together, but that kind of thing. And maybe it was a month. And he kept going to the doctors and saying, look, I cannot get out of bed. And they were saying, oh, it's depression. And he was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I can't get myself a glass of water. It's taken me all the energy for me to come here today. I can't even drive myself. Like, you need to help me. And they kept saying it's depression or it's post-viral fatigue. It's post-viral fatigue. He was like, this isn't fatigue. Yeah. Like, I think I'm dying. And I genuinely thought he was dying. I thought he'd contracted, like, I don't know, a weird strain of disease while he'd been away, or I even thought I made him have like HIV tests. I made him have every test under the sun. And like me and his mum were like up all night researching online of what it could potentially be, and making him do all these diets. And in the end, we had to see a private, you know, we borrowed some money and saw a private rheumatologist. And he basically said, you've got ME. He said, ME is such a blanket diagnosis, but we don't know enough about it in terms of science to kind of give you a direct, but you have ME. And there were, he was offered two treatments. The real severe treatment would, so basically his immune system was fighting itself, and it was just stuck in a rut.
Is that what ME is?
Yeah. So it's an autoimmune disease, and it's, in layman's terms, your immune system fights itself continually, so you're in fight or flight mode all the time. So he'd be wired sometimes, like he was on pills. Like he literally would look at me, and he'd be like, he'd just dropped a bomb of MDMA. Yeah, like he was literally like jittering, all sorts. And then sometimes like he would just, he wouldn't even be able to understand what I'm saying. It was really rough.
Oh my God. But was that from what he got in Asia? Or it caused it?
So it basically kicked off his immune system. And since then, the specialist has said it could have been food poisoning, it could have been a virus, it could have been, you know, anything that had set it off. But for you, it was the dengue fever that set it off in you.
Wow.
So it's pretty grim, but there was like two, maybe not alternative treatments, but the NHS wouldn't have. One was chemotherapy, and one were these anti-malarial drugs, which he's still on, called hydroxychloroquine. So he takes two of those a day, and they basically suppress his immune system enough that it's not fighting itself, therefore he's not having all these problems. So yeah,
is
he's still on them drugs now.
Other stuff.
Yeah,
he's suppressing his immune system.
Yeah, so like during the pandemic, we've had to be incredibly careful. I'll be honest, we're still not doing a crazy amount of social things because he's had his two jabs.
After the 24th of March, it's all going away. Have you not seen?
I know. I did see something that said that, but we haven't really changed the whole time. You know, we still wear the masks in there because at the end of the day, it's a virus that did this to his body. So in actual fact, if he were to catch another one, I don't really fancy taking that gamble of him having it.
You don't know how he's going to be, because it's such varied effects on people. Until you've got it, you don't know how you're going to be with it, do you? And it's just
not
worth the risk.
I don't want to be the one that gives it to him, frankly.
No,
we're just doing our own thing. And it is sad, like, we are missing out on doing things with our friends and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we lost one of our, Chris's best friend died a couple of years ago. And when something like that happens, and obviously we both of, I haven't even told you why I'm in farming. I'll have to go back to that. both of us don't have dads.
Right, yeah.
My dad dying was the reason I quit the salon and went into farming full time. His dad obviously died when he was younger. Then we lost his best friend, who is a good friend of mine as well. And after that, it's like, shit, actually, your health is actually quite important.
Yeah,
so actually giving up going to the pub is rough, but equally, I really don't want to take that risk that, you know, these people can just die like that.
Yeah.
So it's made me see things a bit differently, and I'm not as reckless anymore as I was. But he...
So after he had this, so he started... How long did it, from him being so sick, how long did it take to get him on the right medication? Was it a very long process, or did they kind of...
Yeah. It was an absolute... The NHS are absolutely brilliant in such a varied range of conditions and situations. But when you're going to a GP for something that is completely... I don't know how to describe it, but like, although it's common-ish, there's not a huge range of scientific knowledge about ME and chronic fatigue syndrome and these kind of because some of it's psychological, some of it is physical, yeah. and it kind of, it's in the realms of the unknown in a sense.
Yeah.
So the doctors wouldn't automatically think of that. And your bloods are all normal. That's yeah. the thing. So they're looking at your bloods and they're seeing that you're normal. They're doing a heart, can't remember what it's called for the heart. Heart scan, absolutely yeah. normal. They're doing all of these tests and he's normal, so there's nothing wrong with him, essentially. But this, when we ended up going private, as like a throw everything in the kitchen sink at him to yeah. try and tell what's
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the rheumatologist pretty much nailed it. And yeah, the medication came quickly after. But yeah, he was nearly in bed for a year.
That's amazing. How old was he?
So that would have been 22.
Fucking hell.
23,
and very fit and healthy.
Oh, yeah, like...
person. That's shocking.
It's scary. And I think he thought when he was in Asia, and like discharging yourself from a near-death experience to go and get wrecked on a party island, like he genuinely thought he was untouchable.
Yeah.
And I think we all do to a certain extent at that age, don't we?
Yeah.
And he thought, well, I'm fit and healthy, like, I'll get over it. And obviously he didn't. And that was a huge wake-up call for us and actually quite a lot of our friends as well. It was quite a big wake-up call.
Yeah, I bet.
But no one truly understand, like, even, you know, apart from our direct family, no one truly understands his illness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, no one truly... Because no one saw him in bed where actually he couldn't string a sentence together, or when he's heaving over the toilet because, you know, we had a little play around in bed. Kind of, do you know what I mean? Like, normal, just starting a relationship, things that we should have been doing, he had to prep for days. So we... I remember we went to... Where did we go? I think we went to, like, the beach or something like that. And that he would be in bed for, like, a week, not being able to move after.
Wow.
So, but I didn't mind because I'd fallen in love with him, really, at his worst. It sounds so cliche, but, like, I fell in love with him while we were having, like, one-word conversations in bed, really. You kind of... I didn't say, like, oh, this is forever or anything like that, but I did know that it was maybe a bit deeper than a few of the, like, flings that I'd had in London. And I didn't feel, when I look back, I didn't feel, it's probably the most selfless I've ever felt, because it was so painful to see someone go from being so wild to actually feeling like they have nothing left. It was quite humbling, I guess. But yeah, so the story of why I'm a farmer.
So
Chris got wrecked.
Good on you for staying. I mean, you must love him.
Yeah,
you
I did.
You must have loved him to be with someone that young and all that stuff happened.
Yeah, because I was still living in London, so during the week I was obviously being, like, mental, and then I would be getting all dressed up to see my new boyfriend and then come back and I'd literally just lay in bed and I'd put Sons of Anarchy on the TV and he would be literally with his eyes shut or looking through the TV because he can't focus on anything.
Yeah.
So it was pretty shitty, well, very shitty, but it's kind of one of them things, like, he lost a lot of his good years, but then it kind of secured to him, actually, I can't be a plumber anymore. So it's a bit of a brutal lesson, but he kind of got there in the end. And then, so he started to get a little bit better. And I don't know, I think it might have even been his mum suggested about us getting getting a puppy. To kind of give him a kick up the arse to start getting his fitness back and things like that. So we bought Indy. She's a Springer Spaniel. She's still alive. And probably for the first, like, month, he thought it was a mistake and that he couldn't cope, and it was, like, a real wobble. But yeah. his mum was amazing and his stepdad was amazing. And so, yeah. And then he started teaching her to be... So he used to go shooting as a kid with his dad. And he used to go shooting with Indy. So she would... she'd flush out the pheasants. So he'd train her to turn on a whistle. All the pheasants would fly up and then the people in the shooting line would then shoot the pheasants, which he used to do as a kid. So he started meeting up with all his dad's old friends and obviously chatting to them and stuff. And then he rang me from Ashford Livestock Market and I was in the salon and he told me that he bought some sheep. And I kind of was like, oh yeah, babe, like whatever, you know. It's none of my I felt like it was none of my business. I felt like this was him like going back to his roots and what I would do whatever to make him happy and whatever to make him well. So if he wants to go buy some sheep, like fuck it. I'm on board.
Forgive my ignorance, but obviously I don't know fuck all about this. But if he didn't then take the sheep home with him,
No, what happens with that?
Do you don't have somewhere where you can keep them?
You've got to have something called a CPH number, which is basically, I don't know how many acres you've got to have, but so he couldn't just bring them home into our garden. And same with like, so I've got pygmy goats now and a lot of people want them as pets, but unless you've got a CPH number, you can't keep livestock. So he had to get, moved them onto his friend's holding number or his dad's friend's holding number just down the road while we put in for our own holding number.
Right.
So we had to wait till we rented a bit of land for ourselves for us to then get a CPH number and then they could be transferred onto there. So we just borrowed this bit of land. And then I remember him saying, oh yeah, by the way, babe, they're going to be lambing in a couple of weeks. And I think it's 3 weeks or something. And I was like, oh my God. So yeah, it all started from there. And we've now got I think we're lambing 650 ewes.
Wow. What does lambing mean?
Having their babies.
So there you do. Do you just help them have their babies?
Yeah. So they'll have their babies. And then their babies at about 7 or 8 months, then obviously go off to be lamb and enter the food chain. Or now we've got a little farm fridge. They, you know, we sell the meat direct.
Yeah.
To the consumer. But
so how did it go from you buying these three sheep or whatever it was? And how do you rent land? Where do you?
No, it's not a silly question at all. Not a silly. Like, don't feel silly. It's not a silly question at all. Trust me, I was the same. So his dad's friend, you know, offered us a bit of land to rent.
Wasn't very big.
He did, but this was like a separate off a different farmer. So we had that, and then just from chatting to people in the livestock market, we got another bit of land to rent. Yeah, so we rented a bit of land, and then we rented another bit of land off farmers. And then we used this, so like say we'd drive past and there was an empty field, Chris got this like business card type thing in postcard size, and he would just leave it in people's gates where there's empty fields saying do you need someone to graze this area, we're looking at building up our flock, blah 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 blah. So he used to do that, and we'd, you know, email people and God knows what else. Now we probably rent about 9 different locations now. Yeah. But we still don't own a farm, and I don't think we ever will own a farm.
Oh, we don't live on the farm. Oh, really? Thought you had a farm.
No. We just rent little bits of land.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of them has a barn on, so that's like our farm, but... We just pay to rent it, and then we live about 20 minutes away from there.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't think we'll really ever own a farm. I mean, they're like millions in gold dust, and that's fine. But we would be looking for like a tenant farm, so a farm that had enough acres to hold all our animals.
Yeah.
Because we've got cattle, and we've got about Oh, I think we've got about 50 goats that are going to be giving birth this spring, but we've got the last year's kids as well, so we've probably got like 70 or 80 goats as well. So it's quite an operation.
Hi, thank you for listening. Isn't she lovely? And we gets the story carries on next week. I can't even talk. So yeah, look forward to that. Thank you for listening. Big love to you as always. Appreciate your support. Please share and subscribe. If this is your first listen, then I've got loads of other lovely episodes, so check them out. Check out the Epic Mum Chat as well on YouTube. And I think that is about it. Sorry if I moaned a bit in the beginning about my ill health, but it's, do you know what it is? It's about drawing people's attention to it, because so many women suffer, and it's just, we suffer in silence, and it's not spoken about, and it's just seen as part of being a woman, and it's not. It's bullshit. So yeah. And if anyone wants to come and give me a cuddle as well, then I'm more than happy for that as well. So yeah, hit me up. Yeah, big love to you all. Stay safe and sane. Shout me if you want anyone to come on the podcast. I always like a suggestion. At Mum and Mama Pod. And I will see you next week. Big up. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.